can hear it in the video. A bullet just goes right over the top of me.
That I still can't believe it happened. I just still can't believe it happened.
This is Newsish.
There's a lot of craziness happening in the world, but at least here in our universe, from a news standpoint, really the only thing that's happening is the Dallas police shooting. And we've been covering
the only thing we'll be covering for a while, probably.
Yeah, it's been a day over a week. It's been 8 days since the shooting itself happened, and they still have yet to bury all the officers that were killed. It's just horrible. 5 officers from the Dallas area died. I believe that the last funeral will be Saturday. And it is tradition in Dallas police history to park a squad car when they lose an officer outside of DPD headquarters, and then the public comes and kind of pays their respects and, you know, gives flowers. So right now outside of Dallas police headquarters, there is a Dallas police squad car, and there's also a DART, which is the public transit police. They lost an officer, the first loss in that department's history. Those two squad cars have just been covered with flowers, with artwork, with rosaries, with religious pieces. And it's been pretty amazing to see law enforcement come from all over the country, from Canada, and leave patches at the side of the memorial. I don't know if you've seen officers from other
parts
of the
country. Yeah, I have. One of the funerals that we covered, we actually went around with the still camera and tried to shoot as many of the squad cars and badges and stuff like that from people from everywhere. There are people from Portland, from San Diego. This is funny. I had an intern with us that was helping us out, and kind of as a joke, I was like, oh, did you get the squad car from San Diego? Just throwing out a random city. And he said, yeah, I got that one. Like, they're from everywhere. It's really amazing.
It really, really is incredible. And so this is kind of unique because this happened today. It's been just ungodly hot in Dallas. It's been just like hovering around 100 degrees for the last week.
I'm laughing because I'm wearing a jacket right now because I've been stuck in an edit bay all day.
Well, that's what's so ridiculous about this city. And I think that if you live in any hot weather climate, you'll understand is that it is boiling hot outside. And then you walk in and for some reason they have to compensate and have the AC
right
running way too cold. So you see these office workers that just are in an like they go to work in sweaters.
Yeah.
And it's a whatever. That's a whole other topic. Meanwhile, you can just hear the collective like of the ACs and like all the lights in the city dim as they try to maintain 62 degrees for some reason because we need to pretend it's winter. Anyway, what was my point in this? So, yeah. So it's been a big public outdoor memorial. A lot of people have put in artwork, all that kind of stuff. There's just a beautiful chalk drawing out there. I don't know if you saw it.
Is this of Wally?
Yeah.
And
it's of Wally the robot. And if you've been following the story, you know that Dallas police sent in a robot with an explosive to get the man that was barricaded in that had killed officers and blew him up remotely.
Yeah.
So Wally the robot is holding up and in his hands is a flower. Right. It's a very, very beautiful drawing. But the point is, this morning, nobody expected rain. And
right, yeah.
The rain fell really hard. And so the Dallas Public Library, this is just fascinating to me. They are kind of like the stewards of history in the city. So if something big happens, obviously, most notably JFK, that there were librarians there kind of taking things and putting it into city archives. And so it would become a part of history. And this mm-hmm. was like notes from reporters, from the public, signs, presidential stuff, all that kind of stuff. So these librarians plan to be out there Saturday, and Friday it's pouring rain. So I have this great soundbite. The lady's like, and she runs out, and they're just with the officers and the public. They were able to save thousands and thousands of pieces from the community.
And you're talking flowers and teddy bears here.
The flowers they left, because the flowers, you know, are going to die. They can't save them. But it was like patches from all over the country, handmade signs, flags, coins, just about anything you could think of, religious figures. And they are in right now in the basement of the Dallas Public Library right downtown, drying all this off and archiving it. And they're going to do something with it. I don't know what it is, but I thought that was so interesting and something that you don't really think of.
Right. And it's not yet. Yeah, you had to be somebody focused to think that they've got to save that.
Yeah, and good for them, you know, and they're going to protect it and preserve it because it really is a touching memorial. Some of our photographers during the shooting were there. And you could hear the
bullets. They were there covering a protest,
whipping over their head. And I've told this story before, but I'll never forget watching the 9/11 coverage. You'd have these photographers running for their lives, but they'd be holding the camera by the top and have the camera rolling and pointing backwards.
Right.
So as they were running away, they could still document history behind them.
Yeah.
You sat down with one of our photographers.
Yeah, Brandon Mowry was, we had two photographers out there, Josh Steven and Brandon Mowry. They're about a block or so from each other when the shooting started. Both of them started running toward the sound of the gunfire, and Josh was ended up, I think, getting much closer. But the thing about Brandon is that he was in the direct line of fire, and he'll talk about in the interview kind of his orientation there, where he realizes that the gunshots are coming right over his head.
I thought I was fine for a while, and until 100 people came up to me and asked me if I was okay. And then I started
like, well, maybe I shouldn't be now.
Right. Yeah. And then I started second guessing myself, like, and really trying to feel my feelings, like, am I okay? Do these people have, or, you know? And I mean, yeah, I'm fine, you know, more or less. I just felt for like 5 days up until yesterday, I stopped feeling extremely anxious all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, some nights I could sleep better than others. But overall, you know, I'm fine.
What was hard about sleeping?
Well, that first night, I mean, I got home at 5 a.m. and I was just jacked up, you know?
Yeah, I would imagine.
I mean, completely jacked up, and I was just laying there, you know, trying to process everything. And I ended up having to take some ZQL. I took a sip of the ZQL and laid it back down. Nothing happened. And so I got back up and 45 minutes later and took another sip. And then finally I went to sleep and then woke back up and came back in at 2 o'clock the next day.
So you came in for your you normally come in the afternoon. So that you came in for your normal shift the next day.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I had the option. Our news director told us, you know, if you need time to process things, we understand, you know, but I didn't want to sit at home by myself, you know?
Sure.
So.
Well, walk me through, you know, this happens. I mean, when this happened is toward the end of your shift, right? It was just before 9 o'clock. Do I have the time you're on?
Yeah. I think, what do they say on the news? 8:58.
Yeah.
When the bullets hit, first started flying.
So you're probably, are you in editing mode at this point? Or
yeah. Well, what had happened was Marie Saavedra and I were, on a completely different story that day about a woman who got her cell phone snatched from her hand at a park. And we just had, you know, Josh Steven, our other photographer, who had some amazing video that night. He was the only one there, and he was getting a VOSAT that night. So once, you know, 1,000 people showed up to this protest, then our executive producer was
like, the protest itself was bigger. Before all this, it was bigger than
what
we'd
all expected. Okay. Yeah, and so when 1,000 people showed up, the EP was like, you know, maybe we should redirect some people. So they called Marie and I at about, I don't know, was it 7:45 or something, and said, hey, you know, we need you to go out there and do a package. So we jumped in the car, went over there, and we didn't have any, you know, 10 o'clock is the newscast, so we're rushing to get sound and video, and Josh was there getting sound. And about 8:30, they started this impromptu march. I don't think a lot of people, I think the police chief didn't expect it. I know they've done it in the past, those impromptu marches, but
right. It starts off as like a stationary protest, and then they just take to the street. Sure.
Belo Garden. And so Josh was said to me, he said, here's my card, here's my sound, and I'm gonna walk with them. You guys go ahead and write the story. So we went back to the car, and we were parked on Commerce, just east of Lamar.
Uh-huh.
Lamar being the north-south street where everything started.
That's near, you were you like near Belo Garden, kind of across from, just, there's a McDonald's right there?
Just west of Belo Garden, and there's that parking,
It's, that big parking lot in front of the Bank of America. Yeah,
that's a parking lot with black fencing.
Because just, I mean, just judging from what I saw of your raw video, you were basically across that big parking lot from where the shoot, like, you could basically see El Centro College.
Right.
Like, from there, where that shooting happened, you were kind of, there wasn't, like, buildings in between you and that. It was exactly. A wide-open parking lot, right?
Right, exactly. And I was about two-thirds of the way parked down Commerce, east of Lamar. So Marie and I are sitting there. She's pulling sound, listening to sound, and all of a sudden, I had my hatchback open. So all the, you know, you could hear the sound.
You're standing outside?
No, I'm sitting next to her in the driver's seat.
Oh, you just have it open. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Just kind of waiting for her to get me a script. And then all of a sudden, pop, 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 pop. Marie and I look at each other. We turn our heads. As we turn our heads to look behind us, you know, 10 to 20 people are running past the car. So...
Is there a moment of disbelief there? Like, did we really just hear that?
Yeah.
Because I think my mind would always go to the most benign thing. Like, oh, it's fireworks.
Yeah,
well,
that's exactly what
it's
we
a car by, yeah. backfiring. Mm-hmm. What was the reaction time to, like, no, what, yeah. like, that you figured out what that was?
Yeah. 3 days after 4th, that's what we thought. There was one pop, then there was two, three. I think, you know, that was like a fraction of a second where I'm thinking fireworks.
Right.
And then when the next six went in succession, then you're like, wait a minute.
Something's happening.
I don't know if that's fireworks. And then when the people started running, then I was like, okay, something's going down.
Yeah.
So I told Marie, I go, I'm going. And I jumped out of the car, went to the back of my car, grabbed my camera and started running. And I ran like five steps and hit record and realized there wasn't a card in my camera. This is the first time I've ever told anybody this. And that's like the big no-no for a photographer. But I mean, you know, you're at the end of your shift and we're sitting there.
Oh, I've done it.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so I slammed on my brakes, turned around, went back, grabbed a card, threw it in the camera, started running again. And as I was running, I threw it on my shoulder, hit record. And then there's that the first shot of me walking along that fencing west towards Lamar.
And that was smart, by the way. That was one thing I noticed. Like, you didn't get in place and start rolling. Like, you're rolling as you're going.
Yeah.
And just stayed rolling.
Right.
For how long, I think?
Oh, God. I mean, that first chunk was until I stopped rolling about two-thirds of the way into the drive later on. But, like, it was a good, you know, 12 minutes of just straight rolling,
right.
and maybe two, three usable shots in the 12 minutes.
All right. So it's on your shoulder. You're running,
right.
You're rolling.
Right. Right. And I'm trying to figure out what's happening. Where's this coming from at the same time? So I'm kind of, kind of jogging, kind of listening for the bullets, and the bullets just kept coming. They just kept coming. And I could tell they were just right angled to the right of me, at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock.
And when you say bullets, you're not just talking about hearing gunshots. Like, right?
Well,
like, what are you
at
hearing?
At first, I was hearing gunshots.
Yeah.
And then I got closer to the corner of Lamar and Commerce. Closer and closer. Plainclothes officers were running in front of me.
For people not familiar with the area, you're about you don't know this at the time, but you're
right.
What, a block from the shooting?
Yeah. So once I got to the corner of Lamar and Commerce, what I didn't know at the time, and I know now, was that a block and a half directly north of me was where Micah Johnson was. Just unloading bullet after bullet after bullet. And then what I also found out was the first three officers that were killed and were laying in the street were in that intersection of Main and Lamar.
Right.
Which is a direct line between me and the shooter. So
right.
It made sense that there were a lot of bullets coming my way, and that's exactly what happened. You hear it in my video.
Basically, the officers that died were in between you and the shooter.
Right, in a direct line.
Wow.
Direct line. And once I got to that corner, you can hear it in the video. A bullet just goes right over the top of me, and I just hit the ground.
Yeah.
And there was a still photographer in front of me sitting there just kind of looking at me. I'm like, did you hear that? And he didn't even say anything. And so I'm like, well, I need to get some shots. I got to get some shots. So I'm on the ground, like trying to use the ground as a tripod and shooting these cops that are right there on the street on Lamar and Commerce. And I get a shot of some cops backing up with their motorcycles. And more shots, you know, or pop, pop, pop. And so I ducked down again. And at this point, I'm just like, what the heck? You know, it's starting to hit me, kind of the gravity of it. And then when I thought that, then a bullet like came right. It must have hit a foot or two or three away, just away from me. You can hear it hit.
It impacted something.
Yeah, really close to me. And I you can see my head just jerk because you can see the shadow.
Right. Yeah. I've seen that shot. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's when it clicked in my head.
I think we had to bleep something around there.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently my go-to phrase is holy blank, but not the S word.
Right.
So when I'm being shot at. So
you learned something about yourself.
So I jumped up at that moment and I just decided, I'm like, I got to get out of here. There's, you know, I'm right in line with where he's shooting. So I just booked it back to the car. I left the hatchback open. I jumped in the car and just threw the camera, still rolling, threw the camera
right
in the middle between Marie and I. And I remember opening up the door and seeing Marie. And Marie's entire body, you know, these Toyota cars that we have.
Yeah.
Her entire body was in that little, where your feet are, in the, she's got her.
Under the dash.
Yeah. Entire body is under the dash and her head is basically sticking out.
Yeah.
And the look of horror on her face, it's like ingrained in my brain. Like it will be forever.
People who don't know Marie, she's such a
cool,
bright
and
smiley all the time person. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine.
Mm-hmm. And she killed it after that. After we started going live, she was fantastic. Like
absolutely
nothing I've ever seen. But the first thing she said to me was with this look on
next,
her face.
Next, I want to talk to her next and see if she has a similar story about your face. Because I'm sure you were both terrified, understandably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize I was terrified until later, but, and then the first thing she said to me was, she said, are they coming? Because, you know, she thought they were chasing me because I was running
right
back to the car.
Because,
nobody knew what the heck
now was
we
have
on
the benefit of hindsight that he's in a spot,
mm-hmm,
he ended up getting barricaded, but you don't know.
Yeah.
You know guns are going off, and mm-hmm, you don't know
if, they're very close,
how many people, where they are, where they're headed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you drive away? Where do you go?
Well, I throw the camera in the car, and then I realize the hatchback's open. I told Marie, I go, I got to close the hatchback. And she screams at me, no, get in the car. We got to go. And by the time she says that, I'm closing the hatchback.
Yeah.
I jump back in, and people are walking down the street right by the car, nothing's going on. And we roll down the window, and you can hear in the video, Marie screaming at these people, get back. There's a shooting. Get back. And at that point, I just took off and we drove a block down and I parked by Belo Gardens and we jumped back out and I hit record again and just started running back towards the police. Right as I hit record, there was a group of people just holding each other and crying and praying. And I just walked up to them and got a shot of that. And then the woman said to me, you know, this is kind of a private moment. And so then I walked past them. And went through the garden, saw people hiding behind that berm that, you know, there's a berm in that
sure
Belo garden.
Yeah.
Like families hiding behind, you know, son or
I saw the one shot, the dad is like
covering his son.
Yeah. That was remarkable.
Yeah. And I went past the berm and just walked up the street with the cops with their guns drawn, shoulder to shoulder with them, you know. And a lot of times, man, you know, we know cops. When you think of cops, they're always telling you where you need to be, you know?
Yeah.
They're always like, get back here, you need to be behind this line, go over here, you can't come up here. They all saw me, and that was the last thing on their mind. They were worried about themselves, you know? So,
And this, getting in the car, driving, going across Belo Gardens, this is what? How many minutes do you think?
Oh, geez. From leaving the scene with Marie, going a block down and then getting back with the cops was probably 2 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
This is all happening so fast.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, what was the rest of the night like? Cause it continues to be intense, but there's also a lot of just waiting. You were there till, you know, whatever time in the morning. So what are you doing for the rest of the night? Cause we go in continuing coverage. Mm-hmm. And so they're wanting, you know, constant live shots,
yep,
updates. Right. So what's your kind of like role that night as it kind of progresses?
Okay. Well, after I got my shots with the cops, walking up there, and finally a cop came up to me and said,
you need to get back. There's a guy with a rifle. You need to get back. And so then I turned around and left, or went back to behind the berm where Marie was. Marie was trying to gather people for interviews. And then that's when I hooked up my TVU, which is our live unit, to go live on the air. Mm-hmm. And we just started doing live hit after live hit after live hit. And Marie was unbelievably amazing. It was like nothing I've ever seen before. And we just interviewed witness after witness after witness. We interviewed that Bautista guy, the guy who had the Facebook Live, who was right up on that corner right there.
Yeah.
We interviewed him just moments after he shot that.
Yeah.
And just interview after interview. And it was so tense. There were so many just citizens just right there behind that berm, just still huddled around there. Cops kept coming, pushing people back. One cop ran up to us right after our live shot and said, "This ain't no TV show. This is live. You need to get back."
Yeah.
And every time I saw a cop running to me, whether I had my camera on my shoulder or nothing or anything, I just hit record just so I could get that sound from that cop. So,
right.
You know. So we just did live shot after live shot after live shot all the way up until about 4 o'clock. And then the morning photographer relieved me. We ended up making our way to El Centro later on to get the explosion sound and then the confirmation of his death. And then that's kind of right after that, I called it a night, went back to the station.
Yeah. You know, you talked about Marie a couple of times. I was watching, and I can't remember if I was just scanning the channels and watched something else or it's a retrospect or whatever, but I think it was actually on the radio. I heard it like, I got separated from my photographer. I don't know where he's at. It's like you've got your partner out there and it's so easy. I mean, where are you thinking about keeping tabs on Marie, or is she keeping tabs on you, that y'all are helping try to watch each other's back? Was there any of that going on that you were thinking of, like making sure that you stay together?
Yeah. I mean, we both stayed in that general area of the park, but I mean, it was pitch black by that point. And maybe that when you heard her say that, maybe I just hadn't had my earbud in because she had a microphone the whole time.
Oh, sure.
And so the majority of the time I had my earpiece in so I could hear, she would talk to me through that and she would tell me where she was. But I would kind of, while I was trying to shoot, I would always turn around and kind of, she had an orange dress on, so it was easy to to spot her. And so I would look around in through the darkness and try to see where she was, trying to find people and just keep tabs like that. But
so. Well, moving on from that night, we talked a little bit about, you know, the dealing with it kind of thing, but what's the last week been like for you that you've been, you know, in the media world, like you've been kind of celebrated. You're one of the guys who ran toward the bullets and your video has been everywhere. And I don't know, you probably got a standing ovation when you came to the newsroom or something. Like, what's that been like for you? Because I know as a photographer, for me, I'm uncomfortable being in the spotlight. And so what's that part of it been like for you?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I don't know. I just, a photographer at the vigil 3 days later from San Francisco just recognized me and walked straight up to me and shook my hand and said, "Thank you.
Oh, wow.
Appreciate it." And I guess he saw it on, you know, Facebook or something. So that was touching. I was like, wow. I couldn't believe that, but yeah, I'm uncomfortable. I don't. I mean, I like people telling me, "Man, that was a great package you did last night." Like I like that, but for some reason, I'm just kind of uncomfortable because I know Josh was much more out of his mind than I was that night. Which you're talking to, or
well,
you guys
that's
are talking
just
to
in
him
general,
too,
but... kind of out of his mind. It's fine.
But, you know, and then, you know, 5 people were killed, you know, so it's like, you know,
I think we touched on this before we started recording, but it's like, it's that idea that, you know, it's, there were some real honest to God heroes out there.
Yeah.
And so it does feel weird to be celebrated in a way, but I think there is something too, the fact that you had a job to do and you did it exceptionally well.
Right. But our job is to run towards the bullets and get shots, like get video. Their job is to run towards the bullets and stop the person shooting the bullets.
And save people's lives.
Yeah. So absolutely. It's a lot different.
But it's not to diminish the role that we have. And I think the role that you did, I don't mean to say it like that, because I think, you know, your actions were great and they were heroic. And it's, it brought, just because, and this is partly just because of when and where it happened, that it brought the public into a situation they normally wouldn't have seen.
Right.
Because if media is not right there.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody. We hear about it, and there might be some grainy cell phone video and stuff like that, but there's something about having, you know, talented photojournalists who are there,
right there
that captured these moments that have really, I think, resonated with people across the country.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a horrific event, but but being able to actually see some of this unfold, I think, mm-hmm. is really touched
right.
people in
yeah.
in a way that they wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, so many cameras were. You like you said, right there. And I think it has to be the most well-documented attack since 9/11. Don't you think? I mean, I
haven't
so.
Thought about that. It very well may be.
I mean, there was a lot of cameras, you know, that day. I mean, even getting the first plane going in. But, like, there was so many crews there, you know, right there within a block of the shooter.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the first bullet went.
And this is downtown Dallas. Two of the
yeah.
stations are... Our headquartered yeah. downtown, so mm-hmm. more people can get there
right.
very quickly. When I came in, I just started walking.
Yeah,
because right. we're our station's only in a handful of blocks away from where this happened.
Right.
So it could be covered so quickly and so dramatically.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll kind of wrap up here. Like, what will you take away from this experience? I mean, always have a card in your camera.
Yes.
other than that, like, what? Like, did you learn anything from this or any of the stuff that's happened since?
I don't know. I mean, I learned in Greensburg, Kansas in 2007 to always roll. And that's how I learned that. So I knew that beforehand. That was, you know, 10 years ago. I still don't know. I'm still trying to process it, man. I don't know. I don't know if I've learned anything. I know the relationship with everybody here at WFAA is like times 10 now, just from all being there and experiencing that, you know.
Mm.
And it's I feel like I'm like Marie and I are like have this bond, you know.
Yeah.
Like I see her and I just want to hug her every time, you know.
Right.
And you know, I don't know. I don't know that I've learned anything. I can't really think of anything right now. I just know that I still can't believe it happened. I just still can't believe it happened.
And so our goal for the next couple of weeks is to bring you more of these firsthand accounts, and we'll kind of parcel them out in weeks to come.
Yeah, of course. And there's so many stories to tell. We talked about it last week. So many, you know, the people that are covering this, you know, they've got their own stories that are behind the story. So we're going to explore some of that, and we'll kind of come back to it now and then.
Meanwhile, we got a nice couple weeks off. Did you enjoy your time off? Did it feel like a break?
You mean a break from the podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I certainly didn't have a break from work. You know, the podcast is a nice diversion, so it kind of feels like I'm on, you know. I'm back on vacation.
It's nice to be back. I had a great opportunity. My mom's from Peru. And so as kids, we'd go over the summer and spend the summer with her family. So I got to go back. I hadn't been in 10 years. And of course, you know, the big draw to Peru is Machu Picchu.
Sure.
Which is an Incan. They still don't really know why it was built, but it's this incredibly hard to get to secluded kind of like resort for the Incan kings.
Right.
Incredibly hard to get to. It's outside of a city called...
So it wasn't like a city? It was a Hilton?
Essentially. I mean, the Incas didn't have a written language, so they just kind of have to speculate as to why it was there. So
interesting.
The Incas were the most powerful civilization of their time during their height, right? They had more roads than the Romans.
Wow.
At their height. And they essentially ruled all of South America. And so why would the most powerful civilization essentially have a doomsday bunker? The Spanish conquered the Incas, and the Spanish never found Machu Picchu. That's how hard it was to get to.
Oh, wow.
If that makes sense.
How hard is it to get to now?
Well,
do you have to do some hiking, or do you just take a gondola up there? What's the story?
You take a train that gets you to the base of the mountain. And then from the base of the mountain, you go on a bus that takes you up some switchbacks that gets you up to the top of Machu Picchu. So it's become more user-friendly.
Right.
But the city itself, where you're the base, Cusco, which is one of the neighboring cities, is 2 miles high. So you get like horribly sick with altitude sickness. And it's one of those sicknesses where they're like, it can affect anybody. We don't know why, but it just like, it has nothing to do with your physical shape. Just some people get it, some people don't. Smash cut to me violently vomiting.
I was about to say, I feel like you were setting up, you know, an excuse machine. You were cranking up the excuse machine for like, no, I'm not out of shape.
Right, it can happen
to anybody, you guys.
So I'm like coming off of a day of just being horribly ill, feeling like I have the flu. And I'm sitting there in a restaurant in a nice little resort in a town called Urubamba, and feeling like death. And there's like some American two tables over just eating something, dipping it in barbecue sauce, just slamming some Chardonnay. And we're overhearing them talk, and I'm just jealous, right? Because I'm like, I feel like death, and you're here, you're in a suit, you're clearly traveling for work, and you're just slamming Chardonnay, right? And this Peruvian guy from the hotel comes over, and he's like, Jack, tomorrow we have a meeting. We want all the guns in one room, all the guns in one room. We want all officials in this room. And so my ears perk up, right? And this guy's like unfazed. He's like, well, okay, I'm going to email Joaquin. Joaquin has to be looped in on this, right? He's like around my age. And I was like, guns? What is he talking about? And so one of the hotel employees, as we're passing him, he's like, oh, mucho policía aquí, mucho policía. I was like, why? He's like, oh, you don't know? Hillary Clinton is going to be in Machu Picchu. Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
And I was like, there's no way Hillary Clinton is going to be here.
Take a vacation in the middle of the campaign.
And that's what I was telling him. And what you find out is
gotta secure that Peruvian vote.
In countries that aren't the U.S., if you don't follow U.S. politics, like, you know one name, and that's right. Just the name. So he hears some powerful woman, and he's like, no, the first lady, Hillary Clinton. I was like, it's not.
Former first lady. You wouldn't totally.
And then I was
off.
Like, well, does he mean Michelle Obama? And so as I'm sitting there being jealous of this guy that's slamming Chardonnay, I overhear him say State Department.
Yeah.
So this guy's the worst spy or whatever he is, right? And so in my flu-like symptom connected to the hotel's Wi-Fi, I Google State
Department. Or maybe your flu has made you a super spy.
My senses get heightened.
Exactly.
I find out in a 3-second Google search that Joe Biden's wife, Jill Biden, who's a doctor, is on a woman empowerment tour of South America, and she's going to visit Machu Picchu. So I forget about it. The next morning on the train to Machu Picchu, it's just like nothing but clearly American law enforcement guys, like Secret Service,
right.
Cause they all are wearing like cool hiking pants. They're like mid 40 with a beard and in good shape with IFBs in their ear and like radios on their hips trying to look inconspicuous. Right. And then we get to Machu Picchu, forget about it again. And then see a Peruvian press pickup truck come out. Jill Biden comes out. I immediately go into camera guy mode. And I'm just like walking with the press pool, get my picture of Jill Biden. She walks up into the park. And it was like, we couldn't have planned it better.
Cool.
The cherry on top of this story is I have my strength back. I'm at the top of Machu Picchu. And I hear the people that are with the State Department. And they're like, okay, Jill Biden went that way. If we stay here, Pablo's going to give us a tour of Machu Picchu. And then they're like, where's Jack? Where's Jack? Jack was the guy that was slamming the Chardonnay.
Uh-huh.
Jack is literally white-faced, throwing up off the side of Machu Picchu. And the woman with the State Department's like, where's Jerry? Jerry has the duffel bag with the medical kit. And they have to send Jerry up to, like, treat Jack. And in my perfect world, he got carried off by, like, a llama and 2 Secret Service agents. So it was, like, such a full circle story.
That's what he gets for enjoying his life.
Jack from the State Department, we're watching you, man. Anyway, good times. Much more stories to come. Thanks for sitting through that, Chance.
Your story?
Yeah.
That's okay. I'm used to long-winded stories from you.
Whenever I have your full attention, I feel like I need to thank you.
So the next 2 weeks, I will be not here because I'm going to the Republican National Convention.
Oh, you're going to the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah.
Why don't you do some hotel at night?
Just do some dispatches snippeties. From the road. Yeah, absolutely.
Who are you going with?
Schechter. We're producing content for all the for all of our Tegna stations.
Wonderful. Well, that'd be fun.
So yeah, we'll do a call in or something next week.
We'll get you on. I'm not afraid about that. Just record it on your camera.
And hopefully Hopefully, I'll have some good stories.
Oh, maybe you'll have some great stories.
In the middle of a riot or something. Who knows? It's going to be crazy.
Hopefully.
Like, it's going to be, it's going to be so weird. I mean, conventions can be a little crazy with protesters anyway, but, you know, Trump starts riots when, you know, when he just comes into like Phoenix, you know.
Well,
it's going to get out of hand. I had a photographer friend of mine telling me, that a friend of his works for the BBC, and they were bringing all the BBC photographers into London before the convention to get like special like conflict training.
Oh boy.
In preparation for you know, anything that might ensue. So it's going to be an interesting week here coming up.
Yeah, well, hopefully you have nothing but like innocuous, funny travel stories. And well, the good news is that the police in that area have had a long time to beef up security, and hopefully it'll go over smoothly.
Yeah, hopefully.
We will keep doing the podcast with or without you. This is a train. It's bigger than us. It's going to keep rolling on.
Are you already anticipating my untimely demise or something?
Well, you know, just to be safe. We'll have a couple of people in the wings.
If you get mowed down by a police tank, we're going to keep going on without you.
It's what Chance would have wanted. It's Chance Horner. I'm Sebastian Roberts, and this has been the Newsish Podcast. We will see you next week with a brand new show. You good?
I'm fantastic.
All right. I'm Sebastian Roberts, and as always, saying thanks for listening.
Goodbye, Internet.
Apparently my go-to phrase is holy blank.